because other than that, you would be continuously making a rotation. If you switch from engine A to antenna and engine B, and they're not mounted coaxial, if you know what I mean, when they drop, one engine is off to one side compared to the other, so it's going to be creating a rotational torque. The thrust of the magnetic engine is going to be creating a rotational torque unless the engine is gimbaled at a very specific angle. Okay, any final comments on any of the above, Paul, before we go on to the next subject? WS2N, K2RIW.
Question, Dick?
I just wanted to mention the Kepler, but I hear John in it.
You got it, John.
Dick, just wanted to know if Paul knows, what are they going to do with New Horizons after it finishes the photograph mission on Pluto? Do they have any plans to do anything else with it?
He did say he's going to see a Kepler object. What's the Kuiper Belt? The Kuiper Belt object, is that, does it have a name, Paul? It's going to fly by that, what, a couple of years later?
I've read that they have two candidates they're going to look at. They're probably going to pick one. I don't have a name of either one yet, but they know where it is, and it would be 2019, so 4 years down the road, they'll be looking at that. The best website I found, I've gone to too many of them, but it shows the sun pushing on Kepler and the angle in there, and what they're trying to do is keep the Kepler oriented so that, you know, during, let's say, spring, it's going to face one direction, and then in summer, it's going to, it'll be, you know, offset of roughly 90 degrees further, so on all the way around. It was a government, NASA government site, and it was very long, so I shortened it, and if you go to a tinyurl.com, / MP5BS8J. So tinyurl.com/ Mike Papa 5 Bravo Sierra 8 Juliet. Good graphics on exactly what that looks like, how to go into to keep it steady using the photons and, you know, from the sun deck. Worth looking at that one site. Just the picture's worth 1,000 words, you know. Except when you're talking, you might do better than a picture once in a while. Back to that.
So when I talk, a picture's worth 2,000 words, right? Because I'm verbose. Okay. Good stuff. I like that tiny URL site. I'll have to go to that. The space hardware is going to catch on. I know that now. Wes wants to switch over to a conversation with Roy, AC2GS, on the subject of imaging, human body imaging for medical purposes, and the kind of mixing that takes place. I'm going to give you a couple of words on mixing before I pass it over to Wes. That is, you and I can have radio signals of a zillion different frequencies flying through space.
Email real quick.
What was that again, Paul?
Can I give out my email real quick for questions? I know, you know, for instance, Don emailed me during the week. It helps, you know, guys that want to notify me or even have questions.
Out of curiosity, is your email on QRZ.com? If I go to WS2N, will I find your email site? I think the answer is no. So give it to us, Paul. Go ahead.
I never set that up with a profile and all that on that site. No, I never did. But it's spacenetreport@gmail.com. Don said, like Don, one, you know, another ham, he sent me a nice thing on a solar event that we had the other day. Big solar flare. You know, from the SDO. Solar Dynamic Observatory, very, very good. So I get things like that. It makes it easier to put these things together.
Question for Paul?
West.
Okay, Paul. John, you got it?
Yeah, Dick, I was wondering, remember I asked you about that solar flare? I wondered if Paul read anything about it, the severity. Did it affect anything? And I know it's been the past couple of days.
You got it, Paul.
The one's on, sent to me. And as far as I know, it hasn't done any real damage. But they can. That was an X2? So, it was up there, but last I heard, they were looking to see if it created a coronal ejection. They wanted to find out if it was, if it actually did that, and I haven't heard it. All I saw was the video and the picture of the solar flare itself, so that's all I know, John.
Okay, Paul. I heard that it was an X14. I think that's a very low one. It's lower than a 5, I believe, but I'm not sure. I think they run reverse instead of, I think 1 is the highest. And the higher the number goes, the lower it is, but I'm not sure.
That's like the numbers that they give for stars, yeah. The lower the number, the bigger it is. But, I thought it was X2, but 1.4. 1.4.
Yeah, getting back to a mixing action, when you've got signals flowing through space at various frequencies, because air in general and free space in particular is a thoroughly linear material, the signals run right past each other, do not see each other, no interaction of any kind. Believe it or not, the same thing happens inside of a coax cable. You think you see standing waves, but that's because you're using a probing device that doesn't differentiate between the forward flowing signal and the reverse flowing signal. When a piece of coax cable has a standing wave on it, there's a certain amount of signal flowing forward, there's a certain amount of signal flowing backwards. Those two signals, even though they're on the exact same frequency, even though they came from the exact same source, they do not see each other. No interaction until the amplitude gets strong enough to arc over the cable or cause some other kind of interaction. The standing wave ratio you see with your slotted line or your ledger wires is because you're using a non-directional detector. Let me drop. And your detector is mixing together, is adding together the forward signal and the reverse signal. And in the places where those two signals are in phase, your detector sees a big signal because they're being added together. They're not being mixed per se. Although, to a degree, they're being mixed because your detector quite often has a detecting diode in there, a diode rectifier, looking at the envelope of the result of the forward signal and the reverse signal being summed together in a voltage manner. However, now you start with a nonlinear material, like a diode detector. In the case of a doubly balanced mixer, you have a real linear device in there called your Schottky diodes. And now when you add two signals together, you get signal A, signal B, and the sum and difference of them, and harmonics of each. So a nonlinear substance, or a substance driven into nonlinearity, like a plasma, will give you mixing action and frequency multiplying action. So I think this might be one of the factors involved now with nuclear imaging. So you want to take over from here, Paul? I mean, West, N2XJN, K2RIW.
Yeah, I think Dr. Roy is going to be ready for us. I contacted him and he said that he wants to be with us. I had a few days ago a discussion with Glenn, and we had a controversy and different kind of mixing feelings about certain processes that is taking place in Japan. We started to have a conversation about PET scan, which is positive emission tomography, and then of a sudden Glenn started to talk about X-rays, and I was kind of confused with that because there are no X-rays, so I thought maybe that's kind of combined two technologies together. There is another technology that is being called SPECT, single proton emission computed tomography. That actually doesn't care about positron emission, it just take the gamma that is injected to the body of the patient and goes around and is scanned from different angles. The count intensity of the photons and then gives you the tridimensional picture. And there is another one which is a CT scan, which is actually X-ray, where the X-ray machine goes from few angles and just gives you the shadow picture. But that has nothing to do with gammas. Okay, now, we went later on to the discussion of mixers and mixing frequency. There are a few postulates I would like to make. Since light is also electromagnetic wave, let's name it light, but we don't have to talk about light. The frequency of the light is never altered by passage through the medium. So whether we deal with vacuum, not vacuum, glass, whatever, who cares? The two beams of light is this in the same region of medium, have no effect on each other, so the light cannot be used to control light. And that regards to the laser as well. However, the laser is more complicated because when it comes through the medium, it ionizes the medium. So, since we had the difference in position, John got also confused, and I would like Dr. Roy to give us more light about it. So, with your permission, Dr. Roy, if you are there, please pick up the mic. ECTGS and 2XGN.
Sorry, do you hear me now?
We can hear you, but you can speak a little bit louder.
Okay, how's this?
Think how we satisfied with the voice.
It's good, clean audio, a little bit on the low side, Roy.
What about this?
Now you're at 80%. You're sounding good.
Okay, you want me to keep it at this, or you want a little bit more?
A little bit more would be great.
How's this?
I think you've arrived.
Very good. It's a pleasure to be here with you guys.
Stand by a minute, Roy. That last measurement you made, the last increase, your whatever did the increase is now making some other kind of extraneous noise. Maybe you go back one step.
Yeah, it was distorting a little bit.
Yeah, go back a step because you are getting some distortion.
How's this?
Sounding good. You're not running full duplex where you're getting feedback from a receiver at the same time you're transmitting. Is that possibly happening? Go ahead.
No, that's not it. I got to hunt this thing down. It behaved well the other night, so go figure.
Okay, you've got a good setting there, so please proceed. AC2GS, K2RIW, the group.
AC2GS. I don't know exactly what Wesley wants me to say, except that, unfortunately, I don't agree with the description of PET scanners that was given 2 weeks ago. The nuclear radiologist had an excellent description, and I agreed with him 100%. Positron emission tomography scans utilize gamma scanners, detectors. They have nothing to do with X-rays. The X-rays are included in the package so that you can image the patient using CAT scan simultaneously and get a better image three-dimensionally of the organs, because CAT scanners visualize different things than positron emission tomography does. PET scanners are great for malignancies.
Yeah, give us a... Assume now that we know very little about PET. I am guessing in the case of PET, you take a nuclear material that is... It's injected into the patient, and then the way the gamma ray detector makes an image out of that, is there a detector on the front side and the back side simultaneously? Is there a coincidence detector? Walk us through a PET imaging system, Roy. AC2GS, K2RIW.
You're such a fucking nerd. I bet you never get laid.
first, you take a sugar molecule, glucose, you remove a hydroxyl group, you put a radioactive fluoride atom into it, you inject it into the patient, you wait about an hour. The sugar collects in the cells that are have the most rapid metabolic rate. Now you take a gamma detector with a coincidence device. So you're detecting gamma emissions 180 degrees apart. Coincidence detector finds those specific gamma emissions, which are classical for positron annihilation, and it puts it through a tomography computer algorithm, which spits out a generated two-dimensional slice of the person. You do multiple slices, you get a three-dimensional image.
Now, what's the reason that your gamma detector has a coincidence function? If I did non-coincidence gamma detection, what would the disadvantage of that be? Would there be too much background radiation, so to speak? Over to you, Roy.
Yes, yes. It improves the signal-to-noise ratio because positron annihilation gives you the classical 180-degree emissions, whereas a lot of other background gamma radiation does not.
EP2SSB for the comment.
SSB, start off with your name and go ahead with your comment, sir.
My name's Joe. I'm the radiologist. I'd just like to add that one of the other main advantages of PET scanning is that the radiopharmaceuticals that are developed for PET scanning are much more physiological than the radiopharmaceuticals that have classically been used for single photon computed tomography. So we can get different kinds of information more about how individual tumors and cells are functioning using PET modality.
Good information, Joe. Roy, I'm getting the impression that you probably use PET scans rather frequently in your business, in your daily work. Over to you, Roy.
Well, unfortunately, general internists nowadays get full reports from the radiologist. We usually don't get the images to look at ourselves because the feeling is that the radiologists are specifically trained to do this, and people not trained shouldn't make diagnoses based on limited knowledge. So I don't get hands-on with the machinery, but I read up on the technology.
That makes some sense.
Comment?
Go ahead, comment.
In light of that statement, Roy, every time I dictate a case, I usually designate one or two, three, four, five, or 10 key images and segregate them into the front of the study so that a referring clinician can quickly look through just the images that have the real findings of interest in them.
You know, that's very good, but that's not what every radiologist does, unfortunately. And some radiologists don't. I've seen some where they're very nice images, but I've seen other reports where there aren't much of anything except his final decision of what he sees.
That's called multivariate FDG PET scanning.
Now, let me ask now, Roy, the actual image that you get, I presume, is a little bit like a CAT scan, and that is to say you can take individual slices and display them. Those slices are showing where the deposition of the metabolism took place, where the sugar was being absorbed and metabolized. Therefore, you're showing positron emission from those areas. The gamma ray detector and the coincidence detector is showing you those areas that light up the most, so to speak. I am guessing that the opacity of the rest of the body is not a major factor. In other words, those gamma rays, whether they're going through soft tissue or going through bones, I'm guessing that doesn't make a large modulation of the amplitude of the lit-up areas. But correct me on that one. AC2GS, K2RIW, and the TechNet.
Yes, you're right. The attenuation of gamma rays is not anywhere as much as the attenuation of X-rays to bone.
So in other words, if some of the areas lit up just happened to be the marrow of a bone. The bone would not create a opacity, or what's the word I'm looking for now? And nuclear opaque objects. There are times when you use X-rays and you put nuclear opaque objects into the arteries of a human being in order to show those arteries. I think that's essentially the process that's done during an angiogram. So in this particular case, if those gamma rays are in one angle of observation going through soft tissue and another angle of observation are going through bone, I'm thinking that the brilliance of the object that's being viewed would be almost the same, or maybe the system actually makes some compensation for that, where you're looking for the areas of absorption of the material that's being metabolized that's more important than the actual brilliance of that area. Correct me on that one, Joy. Roy, AC2GS, K2RIW.
The attenuation is not very significant. I don't think it requires any heavy-duty computational correction. It's an excellent imaging technique, as our nuclear radiologists could attest to, especially for metabolically active cells in the body.
And some addition?
Now, in the case of many of these atomic size particles, air can be a hell of a attenuator. I mean, if I was shooting electrons at something and I had to go through air, boy, they would be stopped real fast. I'm getting the impression that the gamma rays have a depth of penetration that's very large, and whether they're going through bone, soft tissue, air, or whatever, they go through it rather nicely with rather small attenuations, is the impression I'm getting. I'm getting the impression that the focal plane array that's doing the gamma ray detecting is placed close to the patient, as close as possible without touching him, in order to get angular resolution. You're not placing it close because you're worried about air attenuation. You're placing it as close as possible to get angular resolution to make a relatively clear picture. That's a guess on my part. Again, correct me, Roy. AC2GS, K2RIW.
AC2GS. Yeah, there's practically no attenuation. Gamma radiation is much more energetic than even X-rays, and X-rays penetrate mostly, even part of it gets stopped by bone, but a lot of it can go right through bone, too. But gamma rays are much more energetic, and so traveling through air is no problem at all for these things.
I think small addition, please.
Go ahead, Wes.
In the course of the discussion of the plan, we get to another problematic thing, and we would like to have an opinion of you as well, Dick, including Roy. There was a wording that stated that when you shoot X-rays into the body or into the matter, you're creating harmonics. So my position at that point was, no way. You cannot create any harmonics whatsoever. Photons do not cross or crisscross, and there is no way for the light to create the light. So there is no way for amplification of the gammas or amplification of the X-rays. You can only attenuate them.
Up till now, I have the impression that you might have a machine that has PET capability and CAT capability, and they give you two different kinds of imaging. And when you complement the two, you're getting a lot more information as to the health of the patient or the problem they're having with that particular organ, so to speak. I'm getting the impression, I'm going to be passing this back to Roy, that CAT and PET are not run simultaneously because you want them to interact at the same time. I'm getting the impression that you might run a PET scan, and then 10 minutes later you might run a CAT scan of the same patient, but I'm guessing you don't do that simultaneously. I'm guessing that the CAT scan could easily disturb the gamma ray detector for the PET scan. So they're separate functions is my guess. AC2GS, K2RIW.
AC2GS. I don't know. It really depends on the design. spend a lot of money and a lot of time designing it, you might be able to build a simultaneous device, and our nuclear radiologists would know if those are being sold. It's not necessary, but I can imagine, given price is no object, that they could build such a thing, but it's not necessary. There are photonic mixers, but they don't exist at that frequency. Regular green lasers that everyone uses to point at are basically infrared lasers that are using a optical mixer to double the frequency into the green spectrum. Now, there are some experimental methods that you could mix X-rays with visible light, but presently the technology, as I understand it, you cannot photonically mix gamma rays yet. It's not technologically possible.
Comment, Dick?
Big comment. Everybody's ready. And before I pass it over to John and Glenn in that order, my company, Airborne Instruments Laboratory, made a device called the GammaCam. It consisted of a ordinary photo system taking a black and white picture, usually of a nuclear site, like a nuclear reactor. You take a black and white picture. Simultaneously, the machine would take a gamma ray picture and display the gamma ray picture on top of the black and white picture by various colors. So you knew the amount of gamma emission from that particular pipe because of the gamma ray detector. The gamma rays penetrated a lens so extremely well that the focusing of the gamma ray camera was not a lens. It was an extremely thick chunk of tungsten. The tungsten had a number of, I'm going to call them digital holes, square holes in its plate. Those square holes went into a fiber optic system. Well, the square holes went into, I think, a scintillation counter. The scintillation counter had an optical system. And in order to make a photograph with angular resolution of the gamma rays, you took this tungsten thick plate with square holes in it, a whole bunch of little holes, and the holes were very carefully chosen so that it became the right amount of, the right amount of raw data for a kind of digital picture, Fourier transformable picture. You took exposure number one with the gamma ray plate right side up, then you rotated the gamma ray plate, I'm going to call it that. Gamma ray lens. This is that tungsten lens with the holes in it. You rotated it, I think 90 degrees, and you took another picture, and then you went through a mathematical process that boiled it down into a relatively low resolution picture. But by comparing the colors displayed from the gamma ray function on top of the black and white photograph, you now knew which pipe, which bend, which connector was leaking the gamma rays. And in the case of a nuclear reactor, when you're doing analysis, that was a very valuable object. But the bottom line of this is that those gamma rays were so extremely penetrating, the only way you could do a quasi-lensing function is with this very thick chunk of tungsten. I think John was going to make the next comment. KC2WGB, K2RIW, go ahead, John.
Very good, Nick. From what I understand, the PET process will detect that accumulation of whatever the medicine that they put in there. It will show the function of an organ or a tumor as it metabolizes. The CT is used to get the exact position within 2 millimeters, Dick. So that is good for the surgeon who's going to go in there. He knows exactly where that is located. Your PET does not give an exact position. That's all I have to say. KC2WGB.
WB2SSB. Comment.
KC2. We've got Glenn and Joe in that order. Go ahead, Glenn.
Yeah, basically what John is saying is pretty much right on. What's happening right now is that you have different types of scanners. Like in Mount Sinai, you can go for what they call multivariant distribution studies of tumors. And then basically the method that Roy was describing, that basically goes there where you can find through a fluoro-D, you know, study, and pretty much they'll do a scan, but like John says, the tomography version of it is not going to be very well mapped. I mean, you can keep on taking multi positions over 2 hours, and, you know, you can get something after that, but the preferred method, let me let it drop, is what's called the PET-CT with the 18F or the fluoro-D, which basically is the same basic PET that you'd get in the multivariate distribution, but now what you're doing is you're adding CT to it. And what's basically happening is that tracer is running through that person for, you know, an hour or so. And then, you know, now they're going to go inside the chamber, and you're going to get a mix of X-ray and gamma, and you're going to get the full variation in a full computerized tomography. Notice the word CT, not CAT, just CT, computerized tomography. Now you're talking about real full-size color images that you can get, and you get a lot of information, Dick. KC2QIQ.
The problem is that the mix never takes place. You're going to have a separate image that you're going to overlay. How are you going to have a mix? You cannot take the X-rays and create harmonics of an X-rays. You cannot create harmonics of the photon. That's the bottom line that we had a problem with. So we would be happy if Dr. Roy also says a few words about an antic.
Actually, before I go on, I want to pass this over to the radiologist, and also I'm going to throw out another person over there, Dr. Alan Wexman. He's basically the director of nuclear medicine over at Mount Sinai. If you guys have questions, you really probably want to talk to him. I'm going to pass it over to the radiologist first, Dick. K2RIW, KC2QIQ.
WBSSD. I just recently stopped being director of nuclear medicine at NYU Medical Center, where I've been since 1973. The PET-CT scan is a state-of-the-art device. It has a PET scanner built in. It has a CAT scanner built in. But they really are quite separate devices. We do a complete set of CAT scans. We do a complete set of PET scans. And then we overlay them, like Wes said. We colorize the PET scans so we can see them superimposed over the black and white CT scan. Scan gives us the anatomy with great precision, and the PET scan gives us the metabolic function. And together, there's much more information than either modality could give you alone.
And I have a question for you. Do you use either the Philips or the Siemens systems?
We're pretty much a Siemens shop. We've got several of the, as far as I know, latest Siemens models.
Now, if I understand correctly, Joe, your gamma cam, your gamma picture, the PET picture, is somewhat low in resolution, but it shows where the metabolism is taking place. I have the impression that many cancers are high in metabolism, therefore they will be brighter on the PET picture. The CAT scan is going to give you a very high resolution CAT picture. Computer-aided tomography picture, which you can display in slices. So now you've got high-resolution imaging of the organ. How do you know which portion of the organ has the tumor? If the tumor doesn't show up as a extra lump in the organ, the gamma function of the PET scan is telling you that the left-hand end of this pancreas is lighting up, but you're getting a very high resolution of the pancreas by way of the CAT scan. How do you know where in that pancreas is the tumor? WB2SSB, K2RIW in the TechNet.
WB2SSB. The positioning of the patient is very carefully controlled so that the alignment, the XY, Z alignment of every pixel that's created can be correlated with one another and are displayed properly on a an LCD screen. You can have a picture of the pancreas which looks perfectly normal on the CAT scan, but it can have a big red hot tumor sitting in it that is evident on the PET scan that you never would have been able to suspect from the CAT scan. That's kind of the beauty of the multimodality feature.
With that multimodality picture, there might be, I'm going to make a guess now, 20 minutes of time difference between the PET scan and the CAT scan, and you're going to try to hold a patient to the nearest millimeter in position during that period of time. Without drugging him and locking him down, that doesn't sound easy. Maybe I'm wrong. WP2SSB, make sure you wait for the beep if there is one. K2RIW in the TechNet.
Yeah, no, that you raise a good point. The CAT scan has gotten to be very, very fast now. We can do the torso of somebody's chest in seconds. The PET scan's the limiting modality. It takes about 5 minutes per bed position. The whole study takes about, I don't know, 30 minutes. And sometimes there's a little bit of motion artifact, but most of the time, everything lines up very, very well.
You must have to give a lot of instruction to the patient during that time of the PET scan. There's a considerable period of time in which you're rotating those gamma detectors, the focal plane array, I'm calling it, with the coincidence detector. You're rotating that around the patient for a considerable period of time. You must have to give him a lot of instruction to make him really sit still, because some people are going to get a sore backside, or they're going to get an itch in their knee. They're going to do something to make them move, and now the registration of the two effects, I think, could be smeared. Maybe your patients are better listeners. WB2SSB, K2RIW, my name is Dick.
Dick, this is Joe, WB2SSB. Well, let's see. The very first PET scan done at NYU Medical Center, I did on myself. Back in the day, there wasn't as active a radiation control organization. Things were a little looser. So the first PET scan done at NYU, I had it. I think it was around 1995. I had to lie still for 3 hours. It was really hell. I really came to appreciate what patients go through when we ask them to be still.
I can see the degree of difficulty there, and it takes a lot of instruction. Is there any benefit of combining these two systems with MRI, or is that so different that it doesn't help? Back to you, Joe.
That's the state-of-the-art trend right now. We have one of two or three Siemens PET MR machines as well. It's two different modalities that complement each other, and we're doing lots of research over the past year or so to find out where it's really going to become useful. It's not obvious that where these very expensive devices are going to prove their worth, but there's a lot of work being done in that now.
So if I understand you correctly, there is a machine right now where you register the patient once, lock him down, so to speak, and then you, in cascade, do PET, CAT, MRI in one continuous operation. And that is what, 10 minutes worth or something like that? WB2SSB, K2RIW?
I'm not aware of a machine that does what you just described. Just the standard of the art right now is to use PET and CT together. Some folks are trying PET and MR, using MR instead of CT as the anatomic imaging modality. That's what's happening.
Fancy. Go ahead, Wes.
I have a few comments here. Okay. And to Xian, when we have two frequencies, or we have even the statement is mixing will never happen. So at the focal level, you have no mixing whatsoever. You may only have a mixing when interact with the matter or the conductor. There is something that is being known for photon resonant third harmonic in mercury. However, it is in mercury. Also, when we're dealing with lasers or any kind of matter, if there is no interaction with the matter, there is no mixing, there are no harmonics. So I think Dr. Roy would say a few words, and then you could guys say a few words about it.
Yeah, the next guy in the list here is Glenn. Glenn and then Roy in that order. Go ahead, Glenn.
Okay, Dick, I just wanted to throw this inside there. We're throwing so many different terms around tonight and a lot of different things, but here's the thing. This PET, the FDP PET, that's just a scan, very, very loosely measured distribution study for multivariant tumor. Then you have PET-CT that's using the Fluoro-D, 18F, and now you're going to pump this into the person. It's going to last about an hour or two inside the person. You're going to put them inside the scanner. You're going to run the scan, okay? You're going to get CT, which is the computerized tomography. This is the X-ray, 100 millisecond, 600 mass maximum doses in dual energy pulses. In he's using a Siemens machine. This is what it's going to do. It's going to give you a series of two pulses. Then it's going to look at gamma. Then it'll hit another two pulses, and it will move, and it will actually go around the patient and measure all the possible angles around. And what the computer's doing is it's mapping all of these images. But you're getting a hit of X-ray pulse, you're getting a hit of the other. Now, what Wesley says right now is that the signals don't mix. There are scintillators that are extremely broadband, that not only are they looking at gamma, you're going to get collisions. When the X-ray hits the F-18, the Fluoro-D, you're going to get a collision. That collision is a harmonic. You're going to get higher energy and lower energy. It's going to light up a higher frequency detector and a lower frequency detector, and it's going to give you even a broader image. So now you can actually look at the tumor with the X-ray marker, and you can see a multi-dual energy pulse that's going to run right through the center of the tumor, and now you can determine the width and the depth. KC2QIQ.
Yeah, let's go to Roy and Joe in that area to make comment on this. AC2GS, K2RW. Go ahead, Roy.
Yes. As far as I'm aware, 18FDG is not radio opaque. It's a media for positron decay and annihilation that produces gamma emissions. I mean, Joe will be able to tell us rather easily, does 18FDG show up on a CAT scan in its in any way, shape, or form. You know, Joe would know.
WB2SSB, after a delay, K2RW for the beep. You got it, Joe.
To my knowledge, as far as I know, the CAT scan and the PET scan are done independent of one another in the dual machine. They're done at a different time. It's we'll do a set of CAT scan images, and then we'll do PET scan images. So this is the only, I'm unaware of any interaction that matters in these machines.
Glenn, are you talking about a brand new breakthrough machine that your organization is in the process of building that has not yet been fully deployed in the field, and therefore Joe and Roy may not have seen it yet? So are you talking about a brand new machine that does this fancy function, Glenn? KC2QIQ? K2LAW in the net?
Not at all, Dick. If you go to Zwanga Pasiri and you go inside there and you're going to get a PET-CT, and that's what it's actually called, PET-CT. CT means the computerized tomography, and you're going to get PET. So the whole idea is that you're getting PET. They don't even talk about CAT. It's PET-CT. That's the machine, and you're going to get X-ray, and you're going to get PET imaging all at the same time. And this has been around a while. I mean, not just a real long time, but I would say probably at least a minimum of 5 years that's already deployed. The dual energy now is probably the next step that's coming up that's going to be deployed even more. And then, of course, you got magnetic imaging PET, which is a little bit different. But there again, that's using magnetics, not X-rays. But when you're talking about these PET CT machines, you are definitely talking about an X-ray. There is a tube in there, and and those scintillators are broadband. KC2QIQ.
The problem is that CAT is CT. You can look at the Wikipedia, you're going to find that this is exactly the same.
2 minutes, Dick.
Okay, the problem is that photons cannot mix. So I do appreciate input of Glenn, and I'm learning a lot. Glenn is great brain. But there is no such thing as X-ray being implemented for the purpose of creating harmonics of an X-ray. You can only attenuate X-rays. And apart from that, if you go to the atomic structure and you get the X-ray photon, you can knock out the electron from the K shell, and then you create the avalanche. And that avalanche would be the series of X-rays that would be a specific energy. Now, another thing that Glenn said is how many of kilo electron volts do you need to create the picture?
Glenn, are you saying that you're mixing more than one radiation type and doing some kind of generation of harmonics and or some differences of wavelengths or frequencies? Are you saying that, Glenn, KC2QIQ, K2LAW?
Nick, both in the area of nuclear science, if you were going to cyclotron labs, if you were going to go into any place, when you start talking about high energy things, the discussion of harmonics, the word isn't used. It's called collisions. But collisions are harmonics. If you look at it, that's basically what it is. As the frequency range increases, the energy is increasing. And if you take an X-ray and you superimpose it on top of a material that is at a higher energy level, you're going to get a mixing. You're going to get something at higher energy and lower energy than the original sources. And basically what happens, I mean, you can call it a harmonic or you can call them collisions. Take your pick. KC2QIQ.
We're running out of time. In 30 seconds, the machine's going to cut off on us. I know we haven't settled this. I hope we've made a little bit of progress, and we're slowly learning a little bit more about nuclear medicine and radiation detectors and so on. This was TechNet 1547, and 73-year-old. And John, over to you. KC2WGB, K2LAW. Bye-bye, you all. And be kind to each other. Next week, we're going to settle all this, it says here. What Dr. Tom Williams, WA1MBA, says, no frequency is high enough, or no frequency is too high. To the real microwave guys, you can never go high enough in frequency. Bye-bye, John. Hard to believe that those electrons, so to speak, can move that fast.
Thank you for visiting the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link clear.
Auto connecting.
Node number 9126.
Welcome to the Long Island Mobile Amateur Radio Club repeater system, node number 9126 on the New England reflector.
Link active.
p.m. Set tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater.
Joe Rivers was
sent to
my
station.
Joe Rivers was sent to my station.
Yeah,
back up also.
There's one for everyone's sales event is going on now. It's your chance to get...
So her plans, I take it, are to take one of the vehicles and gallivant all over the island, or are you being told that you're chauffeuring and you're going all over the place also?
No,
she's using the Toyota. She's running around. I cleaned out some of my stuff and the radio gear out of there. Straightened everything up for her, and she's been using that.
So you're using the Toxic Avenger?
Effort to lure younger.
Hopefully when I get home this afternoon, I'll do a little rewiring job and get the external antenna hooked up for the DMR, so I'll be able to go off the rubber duck.
Okay. So you'll have that car fully wired, and just a matter of moving the radio from vehicle to vehicle.
Yeah, that's it. It's no big deal to move from vehicle to vehicle. It just does what it does. You know, plug it in, power it up, that's it.
All right. So, I actually went the entire break without sending out emails to my students. Most of them probably think I died.
Wow. Not a single email to a single one? What's come over you? Did you, like, turn over a new leaf? And to keep me in Mobile.
Oh, I did send out a couple of emails. In reply to emails that I received, I didn't initiate any.
Okay, so you didn't turn around and send out any blanket announcements. All right, well, at least you only returned correspondence that you received, and you didn't generate any.
Yeah. I decided to unplug from the school a little bit. I actually unplugged them from me. I did get one or two students who actually had questions for me. And then one student actually sent me a picture of her newborn. Didn't tell me whether it was a boy or a girl, and I couldn't tell from the way the baby was wrapped up, because it was wrapped up all in white.
And you couldn't tell, obviously, from the name either? Is it one of those names that you don't really gather a gender from? I guess that's good. So what else did you do over your spring break? It's obvious to me that you didn't go down to, like, Cabo, get drunk, and dance naked in the hotel room.
Stay today for free.
Oh, as far as the newborn, I wasn't told a name. I wasn't told anything other than the fact that the baby was born Saturday late afternoon. As far as spring break, well, I spoke to you last Monday when I was coming back from Boston. Other than that, I was in the office. That was about it. Another slowdown right around the Clearview.
What? They still do.
Because of the fetal pothole in the trunk. I don't know if they got a chance to do anything to them over the weekend, but it was pretty bad last week, and that was definitely a slow